I am the world's biggest super fan.
You're like a super fan.
Welcome to the Business Superfans Podcast. We will discuss how establishing business superfans from customers, employees, and business partners can elevate your success exponentially. Learn why these advocates are a key factor to achieving excellence in the world of commerce. We discuss the invaluable insights of business owners who have successfully implemented the strategies in the book to build their own team of devoted superfans. Gain insightful knowledge from the experts who create applications to help you create passionate superfans. This is the Business Superfans Podcast. With your host, Freddie D.
Freddie!
Hey, superfans, superstar, Freddie D here. In this episode 101, we're joined by Victoria Pelletier of Unstoppable You. She's a powerhouse leader and an inspirational force with over 20 years of experience as a corporate executive, board director, number one best-selling author, and professional public speaker. Known as a turnaround queen and a CEO whisperer, Victoria has built a remarkable career challenging the status quo, becoming a COO at just 24, a president by 35, and a CEO at 41. Recognized globally for her impact, Victoria has been honored as one of the 100 Global Outstanding LGBTQ Executive Role Models by Involve, a 2023 Woman of Influence, and a multi-award-winning leader in the tech, entrepreneurship, and diversity. She's a sought-after speaker on whole human leadership, authentic personal branding, and a transformative power of DEI and shape resilience inclusive corporate cultures. Get ready for an energized conversation filled with bold insights, real-world wisdom, and a kind of leadership lessons that leave a lasting impression. Welcome, Victoria, to the Business Superfans Podcast.
Pleasure to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your backstory of how did you come up with Unstoppable You? What was the story before Unstoppable You?
Well, first of all, unstoppable is my life's philosophy and mantra. I will never let anything prevent me from achieving the goal or objective I've set for myself. So I've had for over 20 years. I am a corporate executive, but I have both built, bought, and sold a number of companies. Unstoppable You has been very adjacent to the work that I've done as an executive for the past 25 years. I coach business leaders. I do personal brand coaching, a professional public speaker, and I've written several books, the first of which was also entitled Unstoppable. The publishers approached me for that, so I figured it was karma. So I had to contribute it to that book. And so I've been living that ever since.
And what came up with the Unstoppable?
So a big part of who I am and what I speak and coach people on is around authenticity, around vulnerability, and being comfortable in sharing life and professional experience. My story is I had a very traumatic childhood and adopted out of a very difficult situation to a family with lower socioeconomic means. That's my why. I was determined I'd be better than my biological mother or the circumstances of my adoptive family. And that's when I very much focused on career aspirations. My mom said to me, I think when I was 10 or 11 years old, Tori was my nickname growing up. And she's like, Tori, you need to do better than us. And she didn't need to tell me that because I just knew I wanted to be better than. I felt like I had probably at that age, a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. And I was going to demonstrate success from all the places that I'd come from, both biologically and from a circumstance perspective. So that's my driver. That's my why. I started working at 11. By age 14, I was in my first leadership role. I was the assistant manager of a shoe store while I was in high school. And got promoted up through the ranks while I was in university working full-time as well. Got recruited out of banking, which is where I worked throughout university, to be the chief operating officer of a private outsourcing company at age 24. So my drive comes from those early years. That's what's formulated this unstoppable nature of not letting adversity, hardship, or challenge prevent me from achieving the goal I've set for myself.
That's an amazing story. And I can relate because I left home at 17 and was living on my own, paying rent, still going to high school and working in the drafting industry. My dad was an engineer and it passed down that. So I was doing drafting work and still going to 11th grade. I know exactly where you're coming from. A little bit different story, but similar. I had to survive on my own and create my own future.
Yeah, I think that in itself builds some resilience. I graduated high school at 16, moved out just as I turned 17. I bought my first house at 19. Just being out on your own causes you to need to do things differently. A very different generation now. My kids are not quite 25. The younger one's not quite 21. And they're very far from where you and I were at age 17.
Yep. Yeah. Different world these days. Different world. So let's talk a little bit more about some of the things that you do with the coaching that you do with some of the leadership. What is it that you kind of dive into with them?
A number of things. It actually spawns, first of all, out of experience. For me, stepping into an executive role at age 24 was a massive stretch role. I'd had 10 years of leadership experience, 13 years of work experience. I'd been running large-scale operations and contact center. Now, all of a sudden, I stepped into a role where I was leading all functions of that company except for finance, sales and marketing, technology, HR, things I hadn't been accountable for previously. Being a very young executive, younger probably by 2 decades, being the only woman at the executive table, I showed up in a way that I thought I had to. Entering the workforce in a very command and control top-down way, not wanting to appear inexperienced, to appear weak and vulnerable, I showed up in the opposite way that I do now. I got a nickname in my mid to late 20s as the Iron Maiden. All business, all the time. I was exceptional at driving business results, but I think I left a wake behind me. People followed me more fear than followership. Taking some of those lessons is what I talk to leaders now. My latest book called Whole Human, The Power of Whole Human Leadership. And that is around how do we, first of all, we all show up our whole selves. We can't drop the personal stuff when we show up as employees and as leaders.
On one.
It is. And I've long since recognized that people do business with people they like and trust, therefore want to do business, whether that's buying from, working with people. And so I had to be a very different kind of leader. I refer to it as a 3 acts of engagement. You need to be courageous to do some of the things I'm going to talk about. Being the next one is authentic and being vulnerable. Those are uncomfortable for many. It certainly was for me. Yet at the same time, it doesn't mean that there's a trade-off for strong business performance by being that kind of empathetic leader that demonstrates vulnerability. I've been a part of over 40 merger and acquisition or divestiture transactions in my lifetime. A lot of times talking to leaders, what does that look like? Some of the aspects, how they successfully manage some of the change or transition. That's where I spend time with business leaders. I also do a lot around personal branding because people do business with people they like and they trust. They're not just buying what you do, they're doing why you do it. And that comes from a brand perspective.
No, you remind me of when I was in charge of global sales, I was that guy that was on a mission. I remember somebody pulling me aside that says, you know, you've got some sharp corners and it's hurting some people. So I had to take a step back, look at myself, because I was same thing on a mission. I had to take a product from nothing and grow it globally. And I had zero tolerance for shortcomings because I was on a mission. Sometimes I was a little bit abrasive and I learned from it because they handled it in a nice way to tell me, tone it down a notch.
And many leaders are figuring that out. The way you described it, which it was probably a little bit the way I was, or leaders who want to be just liked. And so then they actually, on the opposite end, don't make some of the really difficult decisions and have some of the tough conversation that are required.
Yeah. When I worked recently with a particular company, the leadership there never really had leadership training. They started the business themselves as a husband and wife team. They grew it to about $1 million and change and then it flatlined. The way they handled their team and their mindset was that they were doing the team a favor by giving them a job.
Yeah.
They had contractors that were doing work for them. The mindset was, well, we're giving them work. They should be grateful. When I got in, I said, let me ask you something. You're sending these contractors to a customer to do the service. Who are they representing? It's them that's there. And so if you've just made them feel like they should be grateful for the job, they're not going to be a super fan of yours and talking up what a great company you are to the customer, because that's front line. It's not you, it's them. What you're talking about is very important, because you have to look at how you communicate with the team. The team's got to be empowered to have the energy and be on the same mission, just like in a racing rowboat where everybody's got an oar. You got to get everybody on that rowboat and in synchronization going in the direction that you need to go.
Yeah, I agree. It's so interesting to hear you talk. Although there were many aspects of my leadership that poor in those early executive years, I did realize the importance of creating the right kind of at the frontline level employee engagement, because to your point, they're the ones talking directly to customers. It's actually where a lot of my passion and focus around diversity, equity, inclusion came from. When I think about my own experience in that executive role where I felt like the only, as I described, I was so much younger than everyone. What woman, by the way, lies about her age in the opposite direction, which I did at the time, saying I was older if I ever got pushed in a corner, feeling different and the only, and recognizing that company, an outsourcing company. So you think of outsourced call center, and this is the three early days, 25 mm-hmm. years ago, telemarketing when it was still much more of a thing.
Remember those days?
Yeah, as well as customer service and tech support. At the time, in North America, probably still not viewed as the destination job to go to. It's people who are underemployed, unemployed. And at the time I was in Canada, many more new immigrants to the country, potentially the same here in the US. The turnover was something like 300%. In some instances, it was the early days of pay for performance. If we did not perform, we lost money. I had such high turnover, wanted to reduce our costs. I realized if I could create this great environment where people felt appreciated, where people felt a sense of belonging. They could bring the food they'd cook at home for lunch the next day and not worry about smells in the lunchroom and people appreciating it. So that's, you know, for me, that was a really early lesson. And so, like I said, I got some other aspects of my leadership wrong, but that was one that I learned early on to create the super fans you talk about, the appreciation with the frontline employees. Because they're the one.
The front line. Yeah. They're the front line. One of the quotes in my book is, people will crawl through broken glass for appreciation and recognition.
I think that's where I don't totally love or appreciate the headlines that came out a little bit post-COVID around the great resignation and quiet quitting. But the reality is there was a movement.
Sure.
And I think that's where a command and control leadership style, I entered the workforce into. That was employees saying, enough. We want to work for and with leaders and companies that are different, that align to my own values or purpose and mission. And I want to work for leaders who trust me, who are invested in my development. And to your point, appreciate me, will call out the contributions I've made. So I feel like all the effort that I'm putting in, albeit at that point now remotely in people's homes for the most part versus sitting in physical offices, not being bums in seats doesn't equate to performance. Oh. But in real performance equates in hearing a thank you for it.
Oh, absolutely. My wife is in the other room. She's been with the company for 7 years in April, and she does telesales selling hearing aids. She's one of the top salespeople in the company. And she's been making less money because we think the company's being positioned for other things, but she still loves the culture. They fly everybody in once a year for team appreciation. She won the prize to go with the founder of the company, go fishing off Miami. The company's based in Miami. And so she got to go deep sea fishing, not her favorite thing, but she got to hang out with the founder of the company. And you know, those are the things that they do. One of my other things I talk about is sometimes the little things are really the very big things. It's the little thing, the appreciation. They send a little trinket, a little fun prize. You won something. They do a lot of Airbnb gift cards. So we've won several $1,000s worth of gift cards that we've used on a vacation. Those are little things, but they really become big things to the recipient.
Yeah, I agree. Recently in my corporate executive side of my profession, we're hyper growth mode. The team's working like crazy as we're scaling. And in the absence of being able to, we're not in a bonus cycle. So in the absence of that, being able to say, you know what, take your partner out for dinner, like just something small. I appreciate your putting in many hours here. So try and take time off on the weekend and just go have a great meal out. That's easy. Yeah. I don't need to ask for permission from anyone to do that. To your point, small things are the big things. I think those are much more appreciated than getting crystal plaques that will sit on a desk and collect dust.
I have memories when I was in the early days as a tech guy, and then I moved into sales. We would go on Fridays, the regional manager would take everybody out to the restaurant for happy hour, and we would hang out as a team and just have some food and stuff. It was just fun. We just had fun. And we got to the point where we would go camping as coworkers. Some of us would go camping and built more relationships. I'm still friends with some of the guys that I started with 45 years ago in the computer industry. I started in the very beginning. And I'm still friends with some of those guys because of the relationships we built and the management team we had that we were together for 7 to 10 years.
Yeah, that's great. For me, going back to suggesting my leadership approach, I think people did what I asked, a little more fear than followership. A measurement of my success now is having built great relationships. I have people who have come with me through multiple organizations. I've got people that I worked with, to your point, maybe not 45 years ago, but 20, 25 years ago, I'm still connected to, let's say, on a few of them on Facebook, but certainly most of them all on LinkedIn.
Sure. Let's go into some of the things you do with leadership and teams about customer engagement and really that whole experience. At the end of the day, my philosophy is, and I believe you'll agree with me, the sale isn't the deal. The sale is everything after the deal.
Yeah, interesting. We're talking about Unstoppable You and how I'm coaching leaders, but the other half of my corporate life is working a large-scale transformation and ensuring its success. And a big part of that is around things like change management, ensuring successful adoption, and building relationships for future to potentially continue to iterate and do more from a transformational standpoint. So to your point, the deal's not done when it's sold. And that's why, although I've led sales teams before, I would never lead only a sales team. Many times they fly in, get the sale done, and then it goes to client teams, delivery teams, et cetera. When I work with leaders on building your growth plan, whether it's account planning, portfolio planning, your entire business strategy, it's building authentic relationships from a place of generosity and not greed. It takes longer to do that. So you want short sales cycle for certain things, but you're investing in the long-term relationship. And then going back to the trust that gets built through an authentic relationship with people, that can mean when the sale's done and you're delivering and something goes wrong, going, I own it. I'm accountable. Yeah. This happened. And it's the recovery that can be sometimes the best from a relationship perspective. Again, it's about trust. If you can own up to it, fix it, ensure it doesn't ideally happen again. And so I spend a lot of time talking to leaders like that and those that are in sales or client management roles around the way they build relationships from a business to business standpoint, where I've spent a lot of my career. There's a book called The Challenger Customer, Follow the Challenger Sale by Gartner. They said almost 10 years ago, for every buying decision, there's an average of 5.3 decision makers. I think that's probably increased in the last 8 or 10 years since the book was written to probably like 7 or 8. And so who are those influencers as well? And that buyer helps you with that. So there's just so many dynamics and tentacles into ensuring the success once the sale's done.
Oh yeah, we could talk hours on sales. I was very fortunate. I went through some very high-end sales training. And you talk about all the influencers and stuff. We called it a little bit different back in the day. But it was finding the key influencer that may not be the individual that you think is the key influencer. And usually it's not. It's usually somebody that has nothing to do with what you think they should be doing that is the major player in the company. And so that's always been fun to find that person. And then how do you manage that person? But, you know, going back to the customer aspect, really, it's the whole customer journey of once you get the deal done, how does a team really do the onboarding of that customer, making sure that their expectations are properly set? Because a lot of times I have seen companies make the transaction and then don't set up proper expectations for the implementation of whatever it is that they've got, whether it's manufacturing, technology, et cetera. And it's already on a bad foot.
Yeah, I agree. So when we're starting with a sale, a transformation, a transaction, an A, whatever, let's start with the outcome in mind. There's a business case. You're taking cost out. There's growth. You're transforming technology. Understand what that is. What's the user experience? We've got KPIs or metrics that'll get measured. Hopefully you've got some people-based metrics in there in terms of how that's going to be experienced by the end users, employees, customers, whatever. Building with that in mind and ensuring successful change management. A lot of people think that's project management. They're very different skills. Project management will manage time, budget, and scope. Change management is the connection between head and heart, behavior and mindset and successful adoption. I keep saying transformation, but it can just be a sale, a new product, service entering into the equation, starting with that experience and outcome up front, and then making sure you're embedding that all the way through the process.
Yeah, because now you're creating super fans of the people you're implementing it with, if it's technology. You want to make sure they're excited about the new technology that's being brought in, or if it's manufacturing or whatever it is, because if they're unhappy with that whole process, then the company goes back and questions the decision of going with this vendor. Maybe they should have gone with the other guys. That sets a negative tonality, whereas if you worked with the right expectations when I was selling manufacturing software, we would look at the objectives of where the company wanted to be in a couple of years and then set the tone for the team. It's not going to be the fact that you got it today, we got it delivered today, you're going to be making money with it tomorrow. It's going to be 90 to 180 days away, and you got to run systems simultaneously. And so you set those proper expectations. Now what happens is the team on their end, they go, oh man, it took the spotlight off of me for a little bit so I can learn this new stuff. And so they become a fan of yours because you've just made it a little bit easier for them to breathe versus, okay, they bought it and they want me to use it by next Tuesday.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And I've been many times, I think there was like many years ago, I remember a company I worked for, we won a bunch of awards for implementation of some new technology. A couple of years later, that same company decided to outsource the function that technology supported. We looked at the RFP, they'd asked some of the administrators and higher level users of the platform what we needed to be aware of as we move some of that work to an outsource environment. And they actually blamed the technology for which we had won awards for its implementation. But to your point, and just making it easy for users, going back to start with experience and outcome.
Absolutely.
Thinking about how the process and experience was going to be for that person. So instead, we had detractors as opposed to having super fans when we implemented as expected. But this is, again, start with end in mind, start with experience, and then work towards the outcome with that piece up front.
Oh, absolutely correct. I got paid by a company to go on Saturdays and fly from Chicago when I was working in the tech aspect. And that's when I learned I had some sales skills, because I flew out there and they realized they bought the technology and they wanted to send it back. They said it wasn't working, but they had no processes, no SOPs, no systematization, no good training for the people. And it was another district that sold it, but I had developed a reputation as a very good installer and trainer, and proved to the management that it wasn't the technology, and outlined it, I became even more sought after. And they ended up keeping the system and writing me a testimonial letter.
Fantastic.
So I can completely relate to what you're saying, and it's really important. Victoria, share a story of somebody that you worked with in a leadership / customer experience. What was the challenge and how did they transform?
There's one example I like to give. Almost 20 years ago, I was relocated for my first time from Canada to the US. I was probably a late 20-something year old leader. Early days of recognizing my leadership style needing to change. I came into a role where we had acquired a company and we're integrating them in. I'd now done several of these at this point and understood the importance of a few critical team members because of their connection to their client, who would have massive risk associated with making changes with these leaders. So I came in and there was this really tough native New Yorker who was like, who's this young Canadian leader coming in who's got less years on life than I have in this particular industry, telling me what to do? She was one of my biggest challenges. I don't generally have a ton of patience, but this one tested all kinds for me. I understood the risk, so I couldn't make a change. It took me almost a year with her, demonstrating that I trusted her, that I valued her, And a large part was because our client and this very large important portfolio for us valued her. One of the ways I demonstrated that is there was a very large delivery issue with a member of her team. And our CEO was crazy and we're in a room and he's like, who was it? Where was it? He wanted names, like take prisoners. And I was like, no, Tom. I said, I'm ultimately accountable for this team. So it doesn't matter who it was. I said, what I can assure you is we are coaching that individual and this will not happen again. That was the turning point for her because I didn't throw her under the bus. I didn't throw her team member under the bus. I was the leader accountable. And so that was a moment where she saw my leadership was different. I was empowering her to manage her team member, coach it. And so when we did another acquisition several months later and bringing new people in who were all very concerned, she all of a sudden became like the biggest champion.
It was your super fan.
She was, but it took me a year to prove it in this case. I was young and untested, unproven to her, and not like the tough New Yorker coming into this environment. There are a bunch of things I was going up against. And so that for me continues to feel like one of the greatest successes I had, but caused me to step out and do things differently and exercise the kind of patience I don't generally have.
Good story, though. Good story, but I can appreciate the patience thing. So I've gotten to be softer these days, but back in the day, yeah, I was a little curt at times. But, you know, that's what drivers do. That's how you get to the top. So I can appreciate it. And as we get older, we mellow out. It's interesting how that starts to happen. You know, when you're young, but then as you get older, you take more time. So what is the biggest mistake that leaders do that really sabotages them inadvertently?
There are a few, and it's funny, I'm mentoring a younger leader right now who's in a senior role, but as an individual contributor and thinking about making her first into people management. Some of what I talked to you about today around this desire to be liked versus being respected and how there's a balance. I see people sabotage performance in the desire to be liked by their team instead of making some of the difficult decisions that come. Conversely, as you and I talked about, we've had to evolve our leadership styles as we've matured. There's those that drive so hard without understanding the humans in front of them. Right. And that human experience and the appreciation, empathy, and all those pieces. And then there's one other piece, and it's not specific to an individual leader, but organizations as a whole, in that recognizing incentives drive behavior. We as HR leaders help design these incentive models, as well as the business leaders leading their teams. They say they want one thing, but they incent something differently. So if we're going to do that, we need to change the performance and incentive models as well. That in itself can be a big sabotage. Some of the outcomes we say we want aligned with the behaviors that are driven, the way we measure and send people.
Totally agree. Because you talked about being liked. And one of the things I did recently was a person at this particular company, she had challenges in dealing with depression. She got chastised, and this was that company I told you about, the husband and wife company. They would do verbal training, put you onto the system, and then chastise you a week later because you were making mistakes. But they wouldn't pull you aside and do it in private. They did it so that everybody in the company could hear. That created anxiety for her, which accelerated some of her
personal challenges and
made everybody else on edge. When I ended up taking over that company and running it, I started empowering her and helping her with more responsibilities. So I did the opposite. I gave her more responsibilities, helped her and changed her outlook on herself. She started to blossom,
have fewer bad days,
and became more creative because of the responsibility
and empowerment.
Good leaders empower their team and let their team get the glory. My belief as a leader, the training I got years ago was, my job is to make your job successful. It's not about me. It's about helping you do your job as part of my team and successful, and that you're fulfilled, you're fired up. The rest will come to me. That's how you get yourself liked. Is you take care of your team and help them achieve their personal goals, their business aspirations. You don't have to worry about yours. It's taken care of.
I agree. And So again, there's a mindset shift that has to occur. And I think as young leaders, you're trying to figure that out. Hopefully you spend as much time observing other leaders, both for what works well, the things you need to stay far away from.
What's a couple of takeaways that we can share with our listeners here, Victoria?
Some of what we're talking about as it relates to leadership, empowering teams, doing things differently, sounds simple, but some of it's hard because it can make us really uncomfortable. And I believe that incredible growth, opportunity, and success comes when you put yourself in that zone of discomfort. One of my favorite quotes is by George Adair and says that everything you've ever wanted lives on the other side of fear. I'd encourage your listeners to put themselves in their zone of discomfort in terms of how they lead, how they engage, so they can ultimately live the kind of unstoppable life that they want, achieving their goals and objectives.
Nice play into that, bringing that in there. Like, smooth. So you've done this before. I like that. As we kind of get towards the end here, Victoria, how can people find you?
Best way to find me is my website, which is victoria-peltier.com. I'm sure it'll be in your show notes, so I won't
spell. Yep, absolutely.
But from there, if people want to connect on the social platform of their choice, they can do it directly from there.
Okay. And do you have something for our audience?
So there's tons of content that I publish. All of my written content that I share in platforms, it'll all be centralized there. I have my books listed there. I'm not saying your listeners have to buy it, but I do have a companion to one of the books that they can download directly from there on personal branding, humanizing what you do much more broadly. I talk deeply about that. That's been a big element of success in my career.
What's the name of the book?
It's called Influence Unleashed. That's okay. The book. And so when you find that on my page, I've got a free download that helps them kind of map through that. And then of course, if anyone wants to engage with me, talk about consultation, hire me as a speaker, they can reach me through there as well.
What are the other two books that you've got?
So the first one is a co-authored book I mentioned called Unstoppable, which as I said, was just serendipitous for me to participate in that one. The second book was the one I just mentioned, Influence Unleashed. And the third one that came out last year is called The Power of Whole Human Leadership.
Oh, wow. Excellent. We'll make sure that's in our show notes. Victoria, I want to thank you so much for your time today on the Business Superfans podcast show. Great conversation, great insight. We look forward to having you on the show down the road.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
Hey, Superfan Superstar, Freddie D here. Before we wrap, here's your 3A playbook power move to attract ideal clients, turn them into advocates, and accelerate your business success. So here's a top insight from today's episode. You don't earn true leadership by demanding respect. You earn it by being courageous enough to be accountable, human, and real. So here's the business growth action step. Show your team you've got their back. Publicly take ownership of a failure this week and use it as a moment to build trust, not blame. If today's conversation sparked an idea for you, or you know of a fellow business leader who could benefit, share it with them and grab the full breakdown in the show notes. Let's accelerate together and start creating business superfans who champion your brand.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Business Superfans podcast. If you found today's conversation valuable, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share this episode with someone who could use these powerful insights to level up their business. Remember, creating business superfans isn't just about your customers. It's about fostering genuine, impactful connections across your entire business ecosystem. When you invest in those relationships, success doesn't just happen, it accelerates. Until next time, I'm your host, Freddie D. Let's keep building superfans, creating unstoppable momentum, and driving your business toward extraordinary success. See you in the next episode.
We hope you took away some useful knowledge from today's episode of the Business Superfans podcast. The path to success relies on taking action. So go over to businesssuperfans.com and get your hands on the book if you haven't already. Join the accelerator community and take that first step in generating a team of passionate supporters for your business. Join us on the next episode as we continue guiding you on your journey to achieve flourishing success in business.